Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Faith on the Road to Success. I'm your host, John C. Abercrombie. Tonight we have an interesting discussion because we talk about dreaming and dreaming and dreaming. But what should we be dreaming? Is it possible to dream too large? Is it possible to dream too small? Both of these questions, the answer is yes. And this happens because we sometimes don't know the power of dreams. We don't know that this is the universe telling us that it is possible. It's the universe talking to you. It's your creator talking to you. It is you talking to you about what is possible. We were created by the greatest creator the universe has ever known. And I think we're like a radio or a TV. You made a choice tonight of being able to sign in the program. You chose what you wanted to hear. You chose this, and I hope that it was done wisely. If it was not, I think that there is a hidden message here that you were intended to hear this message. And as we look at the possibilities of what happened in this situation, we find out that those people that indeed communicate with the Creator, that communicate with the universe, that communicate with themselves, are destined for success. Yes, they are destined for success. And they do this in many ways, because we hear, as a man or woman thinketh, so are they. What does that mean? If you see yourself being successful, and I don't mean some cotton candy in the sky type thing, you see yourself as being successful. You understand that it requires work. You're willing to do the work. You may be intimidated by the fact that you may not have every tool in the shed that you need. But that means that you will find a way. You will either find a way to obtain the tool, or you will find a better way of utilizing something else. This is what success is all about. Success is about invention. We hear that necessity is the mother of all invention. Whether you are looking to make pies, make a class, and there are people that do this. They do it quite well. They make a class on a particular subject, and they can monetize this if they wish to. This is not saying that you have to, because you have broad leeway in what you do, how you do it. Even the audience that you're seeking to get into. We sometimes have a brilliant idea, and we think that everybody wants it. Everybody wants it. Everybody needs it. Everybody is going to flock to you as soon as they know this. This is not always the case, because many times we put something out, and it's not directed at anyone or anything or any audience. And it gets overlooked. Then we think that we have failed. Sometimes it comes down to marketing. And we've seen this where outside the market find an interest in it. But we have to have a core audience of what we're looking for. If we wanted to make pies, for example, full round pies, a football game may not be the place to sell them. because people are looking for something they can put in their hands and they can eat now. Having to look for a knife to cut slices, a plate to put the slices on, maybe not the right audience. But there are ways that we can do this. We may pass out samples during the game and then have a booth outside that caters to full pies, slices, whatever the case may be. There's more than one way to skin a cat. And that is very valuable to us. And why is it valuable to us? Because sometimes we develop new ways of doing things. We did so during the COVID era. We found different ways of marketing. We found that some people that did not catch on early enough are no longer with it. Those that did and are able to see far enough in advance know what works, what doesn't work. They know when to modify, and they know when to lead them. We hear the song about playing poker. You have to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And there is wisdom in there beyond what many people see. Because poker is not necessarily the best hand. Understand this. If you know anything about poker, it's the one that survives to the end. There are people sitting on the sidelines that had a better hand. But somewhere along the line, they got bluffed out. Bluffed out. You may be sitting in a card game and have three of a kind, which is better than two pair. But the way the person bets, the way that they hold themselves, the way that everything goes down, if you throw your hand into the muck, which is the pile of cards that are no longer in play, you are not winning. You can go back and talk about, well, I had this, I had that. It does not matter because you didn't stay until the end. Sometimes that person gets bluffed out. In the case of you, with trips, three of a kind, which beats two pair, any two pair. But you didn't have the belief that you had the best hand. You may have a flush. You may have a full house. And you can still be beaten. A higher flush could take you out. A higher full house could take you out. Some of this comes from reasoning. Some of it comes from experience. Some of it comes from intangibles that you don't see. And so what we have to realize as we plot our individual roads to success, you may find that you have the knack of telling stories, but you may not be good at writing. You can find somebody to polish the stories that you tell up and make a bestseller. It's possible. Not only is it possible, but it has been done more times than you realize. Therein lies the possibility of a partnership. There are some people that can't come up with the original idea, and they are perfectly happy making money, polishing up the stories that you tell them. There are people that can tell the stories, but have difficulty forming it into a means or whatever that people are willing to purchase or even willing to listen to. It is there. Some people make money by performing on stage. And if they had to write a book, even though they are brilliant on the stage, they may flop at it. We have the ability to use both parts of that equation to be very satisfying to people. The person that likes to take that story and polish it and do whatever it takes, tweak it to the point of making it a success story or a successful story are in demand. Sometimes you have to start at one level and pay your dues to move to another level. This is why when I'm attending a football game and I see the star player go out for a pass or go for a run and get stopped or drop the ball or whatever, and people are in the stadium saying, I could have done that. I could have done better than that. I don't doubt them. But they weren't willing to pay the price. They weren't willing to get up early in the morning while the dew is on the grass. And I remember doing this in college. We went out and we did push-ups, and there was still dew on the grass, and you got wet. Some people weren't willing to pay that price. And by not being willing to pay the price, you may have been much better than the people that started, but you weren't willing to pay the price. You weren't willing to do what was necessary. And what would be necessary? In that case, you have to be there. But there are other situations where you don't have to be there. When you are telling someone your life story, you're fabricating a tale, you're relaying facts to them. That's something that you can do. But then you could be doing something else while they are polishing this up, putting it in a form that is usable for what you want it to be used for. You can become very successful that way. Many people have best-selling books that have been created in this way. This may be particularly advantageous to people that have difficulty with the English language as most people know it. At other times, you need a person with certain dialects, with certain things, to bring realism to your project. The key to success is knowing when to hold them, when to fold them, when you should do it, and when you should get other people to help you do it. I've relayed this story before. I had a website, and I needed to make an icon for the site. And it kept getting pushed, put off, and put off because I didn't know what I was doing. I could have taken a class, but it took more time than I was willing to invest in it. So what happens? That idea withers on the vine. It withers on the vine. I would have been much better off to hire somebody to do it, which I ultimately did. It may not be the best, but there is something better than perfection. And we have to realize this. There is something better than perfection. That is done. When we write a book, it is out there for the world to see. And particularly if it's in print. If it's in print, it's there. But it's done. We can explain if we feel necessary what we intended or meant by that, but we can be successful at the same time. Now with Publish It Yourself, you can make changes on the fly. You find out that you made a horrible mistake. You can change it. And the next person that buys it sees those changes taking place. What could be better than that? You can either try to attain perfection, and we all should be shooting for perfection. We should be looking at what we can do to make what we do better. Trying to be perfect in the very beginning and from that point on sometimes leads to it not getting done. We're not sharing the bulk of our knowledge, our wealth, our wit, our knowledge, because we are looking for that. You can write something and it may be a bestseller. And you look back later, maybe 6 months, maybe a year, may even be longer, and says, oh my God, did I say that? It happens. It happens to the best of us. We are human. We err. People that want to achieve perfection may achieve it. And then they don't do it. They don't publish that book this week. They wait a couple of weeks. They go back and they find something else that they can change. That is procrastination to the nth degree. You would be much better off doing it, learning from it, and moving on. Maybe you come back and re-edit later. But if you never do it, you can't even re-edit because you never put anything out. It may have been better in its first rendition, and we often find that. I sometimes write, I come back, and as I'm reading through it, I say, whoa, I should change this. And then I read a little bit further. Oh, I did change this. I did put that thought in it. I did incorporate that. This will happen to you, my friends. It is part of success. Build something. We look at the young man that was shot for going to the wrong door just a few days ago. And he was shot in the head and shot in the arm by a person that had been radicalized. But he had dreams. He had his clarinet. He had his dreams. He wanted to be a chemical engineer. But I tell you, because I've worked as a chemist, I've worked with chemical engineers. Sometimes we try something, and it is the right idea. We know that it should work. But there is something that we did not anticipate that prevents it from working. If we had never tried it, if we had never moved beyond the concept, we may still be thinking that it worked. Sometimes the solution is very easy. Sometimes it's very hard. But we look and we see people like Katherine Johnson. And Katherine Johnson was one of the hidden figures. And what they had done is they had redacted some information. And redacting is basically drawing a black line through. Maybe a little bit more complicated than that. But to those of you that are old enough, you may remember that that's the way documents were redacted. Redacted means to remove the information from sight. And so this happens. But in many cases, just drawing with a black marker through it did not prevent it from being seen if held up to the light. This is what she did. Sometimes we have to be innovative in what we do. I found out a long time ago, we had secretaries would type and they would use a carbon ribbon. Now, when I started typing, in the early 60s, we used ribbons that were cloth, and they were reused and reused and reused. But the carbon ribbons were replaced because when that key hit the carbon, it took it off of the spool. And when you hit over that same spot again, you may not get a full letter. But you could take that ribbon and read what had been typed. You could see the errors. You could see the corrections. You could see everything that happened there. It was not a very secure way of doing things, but it was a way of getting it done. So sometimes classified information could be deciphered merely by getting the garbage that the secretary had thrown away. We have to be very careful about that. sometimes we have ideas, proprietary information, for example. You may know the ingredients of a product, but you don't necessarily know how it's combined. They may have trademark on certain things about that process. You may have certain things about that. You may be able to tell a person everything that's in it, but they can't duplicate it because they don't know certain proprietary steps. That is property that you own. You may be able to put the contents of your product out for everybody to see. Now, sometimes people get around it because the law says that if it's an extremely small amount of a product, excuse me, you may not have to list it. For example, some kids get into difficulty because they get non-alcoholic beer. Non-alcoholic beer doesn't mean that there's no alcohol in it. And you say, how in the world is that possible? It's utilized in that industry as well as others. Because the law says that if there's less than 1% or 0.5% in the product, you don't have to list it. And so they say non-alcoholic. But if you drink enough of it, you're going to get the same as if you had drank smaller amounts of more potent products. We have a situation now where we run into it. And the situation at this point is Delta 8. Delta 8 is a product out of marijuana. And so when we put in the farm legislation, we weren't smart enough to figure out that small amounts, excuse me, of Delta 8 are found in hemp. Hemp is related to marijuana, but it does not contain the Delta 9 that everybody is seeking because of its hallucinogenic effects. And so what we have is sometimes called marijuana light. Small amounts are being concentrated, and we don't have the knowledge, didn't have the foresight to look at the chemicals necessary to process that. And so now there is a great fear that the chemicals may be much worse than the presence of Delta 8. Delta 10 is in there as well. And we've done less to study that than we have Delta 8. There are ways around it, but I implore you, do not try to duplicate some of these things because you can get into problems otherwise. We had a time when tobacco was one of the greatest sellers on the earth. When you look at the history of tobacco and how it came and how certain blends and certain crosses came about and fueled a world economy, we hadn't looked for enough. We hadn't looked to see the health cause the deaths of many people. And in cases where it didn't cause death, it often caused other diseases, other breakdown of body parts, because we had not studied it deep enough. I like to make sure that we are somewhat organic in what we do. And I think that many of the old processes are still good because we've been able to survive them, because we have not introduced the number of alien chemicals. When you look at anything such as cakes and pies on the shelves of convenience stores, gas stations, supermarkets, or whatever, there are small amounts of products in there that can harm you. But rather than reveal these, they are often covered up. Right now, we're battling for permanent chemicals. We're looking at them. Because they were in small amounts, we didn't worry about them. When we look back to the 50s and beyond and times around there, We were killing ourselves with DDT. DDT killed bugs, killed insects. But we were ridding the planet of our national symbol, the bald eagle. Why? Because these dead and dying insects were consumed by other animals, birds, and others that depended upon insects. It began to concentrate. And when we look at the eagle, the presence of DDT caused soft eggshells. Soft eggshells often were broken before full incubation. And we were killing our eagles because we didn't want this pest around. We find that pyrethrins, another form of chemical that occurs naturally, could have been our savior. As you are listening to this broadcast, I want you to understand that many times we have at our fingertips the solution to complex problems. Disregard of the fact that they last basically forever. We throw them out of our car windows. We take trash to the dump, and often it flies out of the window or off the truck or whatever. We don't worry about doing it because it's small. The earth is big. But along comes a rain and washes it into our aqueous systems, our branches, our creeks, and it begins to accumulate. When we look at the seaweed there, who knows that you're contributing to it when you overuse your laundry detergent, your dishwashing detergent, your soap that you use to cleanse your body? It stimulates the growth of plants. When it goes down the drain, it doesn't cease to exist. It exists in a different form. We have to reprocess that water, and it takes a lot of doing to do so. And in the process, we have an area twice the size of Texas floating out in the Pacific Ocean. We're not made for that. In fact, it's estimated that we eat enough plastic to make a credit every week. Every week. Were we designed to consume plastic? No. But I think, and I do not have the information to back this up, that many of our illnesses come from the ingestion of chemicals and other materials that we are not designed to eat. Farming. Most people look at it as something for someone else to do. But do you realize that you can make organic products? You can grow organic products? But you have to be wise about it. And if the land has been used and many of the banned products used on them, it's not suitable. So we've gone around, we've poisoned our earth. We are at the point where we are just disposing of stuff. Now, somebody listening to this may get wildly stimulated by this conversation. And what do I mean by that? You may have a way of converting this into usable products. I was just looking at a program talking about waste, animal waste. In this particular case, dairy waste. Cows go to the bathroom, and 14% of our methane is coming from these cows. So what does that have to do with you sitting in the inner city, sitting in your home in the suburbs? You don't have a cow. You drink milk. I'm not telling you not to drink milk. But look for alternatives in what we can do. What these people have done is found a way of collecting the gases from the decomposition of this fecal matter. And they showed a large tractor being run off of refined methane. They produce enough in half a day to run that tractor for a week. We're going to have to go to that. I've often wondered why, particularly in the county where we have septic tanks, that we don't find a more usable way of handling our waste. It's possible. I remember back in the 60s and 70s reading articles in Mother Jones about collecting our garbage and using it to create gases that we could use to run our stoves, that we could use to heat our homes and other things. The problem was it was not cost effective. Cost drives so many things today. Cost drives so many things today. I've often wondered why we have children dying because they've been left in hot cars. And I am saying do not leave children, pets, or anything else in the car, even perishable food, because it can heat up due to the greenhouse effect. The greenhouse effect is what we're seeing right now on our planet, because the sunlight comes in one form or another. I think it comes in long rays, and it gets trapped as short waves and cannot escape. That may be backwards. But why we can't use that sunshine that reaches the car to at least keep it cool? Maybe the surface is not enough. Maybe we need to pour panels to catch more sunlight. Whatever the problem is, we have the ability to understand it, utilize it, and benefit from it. We have a police department in our neighborhood. I'm in South Carolina now. I don't know because I missed the news as to which one it was. But they have gone to all Tesla vehicles, all electric vehicles. They're quick. They are sustainable. And they can get us much, much better atmospheres. We have cognizance of what the problems are. Part of our problem is not discussing problems. We often look at it and understand that there's a cost involved. When we talked about alcohol as fuel, and I want you to understand this, George Washington Carver and Henry Ford had talked about automobiles that ran completely on alcohol. We can turn most all of our vegetation into alcohol. Alcohol doesn't pollute like gasoline, but gasoline was cheap, and that was the answer to the problem. So what we're doing now is we're killing ourselves. Those of you that are old enough remember when we had leaded gas. What they found is that octane, which has nothing to do with how effective a fuel is, but it causes branched hydrocarbons and reduces the knock in engines, that rather than refine it at a cost, they could put a couple of drops of ethyl lead in it. Ethyl lead is a dangerous poison. And it wasn't until we found out that in the most remote parts of this planet that the concentration was increasing. We could look at the North Pole, the South Pole. We could look at remote locations where nobody was and tell when we started using leaded gasoline. We can also look now and see when we stopped using those fuels. We are amazing creatures because we have a scientific knowledge. We don't look often at our Creator as being the inspiration for these things. And to the contrary of what Carver and Ford were going to do, we went with gasoline engines. During the war, metal was in short supply. Metal was in short supply. George Washington Carver and Henry Ford came up materials made from soybeans that resisted damage when struck with a sledgehammer. But metal, the price went down. We can pass now areas where there are acres and acres and acres of cars just rotting away. How is this possible? Because we have not looked at products from conception to grave. When I worked in the nuclear industry, we couldn't throw batteries in the trash because they contained certain elements that were hazardous. So they had to be recycled. We don't do it now because it might cost us a penny or two. But what we're doing is we're poisoning the earth. We are almost like morons because what we're doing is we're kicking the problem down the road. I was writing today because tomorrow, Sunday morning, I will be on a radio show, WABB, out of Anderson, South Carolina. And I'm going to be talking about historically black colleges and universities. And we have done some things there that are absolutely amazing. But what we've done, because we see race as an obstacle, many of the most brilliant minds in this country are being denied the opportunity to do the research that could save our bacon. We're going to have to get to the point of becoming mature enough that we talk about those things that are problems. When we look at people like DeSantis in Florida saying, no, you cannot teach black history. You cannot teach black history. Some of the most amazing Americans that you will ever discover can be found there. I do a blog post. It's called AmazingBlackHistory.com. And again, this week I look at HBCUs. And there is a definition of an HBCU. It's not just an institution that was attended by black people. It has to have been formed prior to 1965 when legislation changed the ability of people of color to attend schools. Black colleges and universities were formed because we were not welcomed anywhere else. And when you look at many of the people in that area, look at Percy Julian, for example, one of the greatest organic chemists of all times, was a black man. When we look at people like Garrett, who developed the mask that can be used in hazardous environments, he was not able to sell his product, even when he went under Lake Erie and rescued people who were dying trying to rescue other people. Why? Why couldn't he do this? Because we've gotten to the point that it was a black man that invented it. Fire departments and others in the South that could use it and all over the country refused to purchase. Not because it wasn't effective, but because of who did it. He was able to find success, and how he did it was he hired a white man to be him. He then, this black man, portrayed himself as a Native American, donned the equipment, went into the hazardous area, and showed the effectiveness of it. Are we a country in which we are so backward, so inane that we can't accept the best that people have? Some of you have tried and have come up with things that work, but you don't know the full system. I want to encourage you, because as I talk about the HBCUs, and we'll be doing so on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock on WABB, one of the things that we must realize is that we were created by a creator that was not playing jokes. He didn't have a mold one and a mold two, a model one and a model two. He made all people the same. When we look back 2 weeks ago, the post on the Ishango bone. Now, most people have never heard of the Ishango bone. We talk about civilization as if it developed 3,000-4,000 years ago. We look at Egypt as if it was not on the continent of Africa. We see counting systems. We don't realize that prior to the Incas and the Mayas in central Mexico, that there were black people, the Olmecs, who had a calendar that was very complex. There were two parts of a year, and it went on, I believe, a 5,700-year cycle. And the cycle ended in 2012. Everybody was in a panic because it didn't continue forever. But they had a vagismal mass system. What do I mean by vagismal? It's a base of 20. Now, we look back at the Ishango bone, and we are given information that says and shows to those willing to believe it that mathematics started 3,000-4,000 years ago. The Ishango bone goes back 18,000 to 20,000 years ago and came from Central Africa. Central Africa. Who is in Africa at that time? Africans. I'm not saying that we're any better, but we're certainly not any less than anybody else on the face of the earth. Program, the material that I'm rendering to you is that white people are hurt as bad by the lack of information that we find in our history as anybody else. Because you don't realize that in many cases we can partner with things. Let me tell you something. We oftentimes fall in this category of defaming the Jews. Marian Anderson, one of the greatest contraltos that this country has ever seen, was denied the ability to perform at Constitution Hall by the Daughters of the American Revolution. And that in itself is a very silly thing, because just like we find that Angela Davis had ancestors that came to America on the Mayflower. Angela Davis, remember her in the 60s with the afro out to here, out shoulder width, out to here? Some of her ancestors came over on the Mayflower. We find out that Tia Mowry of the Mowry sisters, the Mowry twins, same thing. We get to a point where we don't accept fact. You are every bit as good as anybody else. We look at Carolyn Randall Williams, noted for her academic performance. But she's the great-great-granddaughter of Edmund Pettus. That name sound familiar? It should be, because the Selma to Montgomery March started on the bridge named for the segregationist. We find so many people. I'm right now reading a book called The Virtue of Cain, C-A-I-N. His name originally started out as C-A-I-N-E. As so many blacks did, we accepted the names of those who enslaved us. The master changed his name, he changed his. But one of the high executives at Microsoft retired, decided to do some searching of his family. He had been told the dark skin in the family came from Native Americans. And to show you how silly we get in terms of race, in 1924, Virginia had what they called the Racial Purity Act. And racial purity is based on the fact, in this particular case, that there were only two races. Either you were white or you weren't. And if you weren't, you were considered black. Native Americans weren't white. They were considered black. And when we look at whether we're talking about the one-drop rule, which is ridiculous, because the average person has 94,000 drops of blood. And we know that human beings came from Africa. We haven't seen any evidence that they came from anywhere else. That all of these people running around have black ancestry. Might be a ways back. But as we look at this situation, white people were so proud of saying that they had Native American heritage, that they came from Pocahontas, that they wrote into this law the Pocahontas exception. Enough blood to call you black did not call you Native American, or black as it was under that law. You can still be white. How ridiculous is that? Understand that we were created by the greatest creator that has ever walked. You don't need to stand behind anybody. And I'm talking to white people as well as any other race or ethnicity that we see. We have distorted our history to the point that we are not getting the best of everybody. When we look at pictures showing the laying of the Golden Spike in Promontory Point, Utah, that connected the east to the west on the train, driving that Golden Spike was a monumental achievement. But if you look at that picture, it's all white people. Most of them did not work on the railroad. The people that performed most of the dangerous activities, including cutting tunnels through solid rock, were Asian people. When I worked in Washington State, there was a location that we often call China Tunnel, and that's because it was formed by Chinese labor, dug through solid basalt. Along the way, we have contributed mightily. America has never gone into a war in which black people did not participate. Now, what does that have to do with success? It shows that we are successful. We can do anything from the American Revolutionary War to every war that you can mention. We have been there. We have stood. And when we look at what has happened to our history, it's not there. But we have to develop within ourselves the knowledge that God created us as well. We can look back at history, and I implore you to go back to AmazingBlackHistory.com. We've got over 300 posts and accounting every week. This week we talked about historically black colleges and universities. They were formed before 1965. Why? Because 1965 was a landmark legislation that allowed for more enrollment in white institutions. We have more people in white institutions than we do black. But we sometimes want to look at those institutions as being substandard. They are accredited by the same associations that credit any other university or college. We have nothing to be ashamed about. And when you get to the point that you understand who you are, who created you, that your ideas have value. I've seen people say, this is an idea that I have. It's a great idea. But if it's so great, somebody else would have invented it. Horse feathers. I would say something else, but I understand that we have young listeners. And I want you to encourage young listeners, because these are the people that need to be inspired. I know that at some point in time, we are going to cure Alzheimer's and other cognitive functions that we have problems with today. I didn't do it in my generation, but I'm hoping that my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren can do it. We have the abilities. When we look at James McCoon Smith, James McCoon Smith was denied admittance into a medical university in America. But he was fortunate in that he was accepted by the University of Glasgow in Scotland. He went there, he earned 3 degrees and came out at the top of his class. He did his internship in Paris So he had to at least be bilingual. Is this somebody that is inferior? No. This information is not only for black people, it's for everybody. When I was working in law enforcement, I depended every day that I worked on a woman because a woman invented Kevlar. Kevlar could save my life. We don't talk about it, but that doesn't mean it's not possible. We need to get the message out. We need to make sure that we understand, that you understand, that we can work together. The reason that we don't is because we don't talk. We don't discuss. We don't know. When I came through high school, I had no idea that my ancestors had done anything besides pick cotton. I now find they've done more. The first black Miss USA is my cousin. I didn't know it. I had to be told that. What I find out is that the person that owned my ancestors and may be a part of my bloodline was William Henry Gist. Who was William Henry Gist? He was the governor of South Carolina with a plantation in Union, South Carolina, called Rosewood. And he signed the secession order that took South Carolina and 11 states out of the Union. They formed a separate country and fought America, and yet we want to honor them. They are changing the name of Fort Hood. Fort Hood was named after John Hood, a Confederate general, a man who took up arms against the United States. I don't think that that's anything else but pure stupidity. Why would you name one of your most prized possessions after your enemy that has taken it up? We need to understand that all people, when we look at the, and I won't go into this because our time is running short, but a black woman saved the governor of Georgia from being killed. Interesting story. Mammy Kate is her name, and she comes from African royalty. We didn't come over here as enslaved people. We came over here as people that had roots that goes back to kings, queens, princesses, and whatever. But it was lost because we have not studied our history. I want you to understand that. Now, as we look forward, we've got about 5 minutes, and I'm going to close this off because we have another great program coming on. And I want you to be able to do that. I want that person to be able to set up as quickly as possible so that they can come on at 8 o'clock. BlogTalkRadio/CrownTalkingDrums has an amazing lineup. I want you to take a look at it. We have programs that come on various days of the week. We have people that are dedicated, and that dedication comes from making you knowledgeable of who you are and what can be accomplished. My name is John C. Abercrombie. The program that you're listening to is Faith on the Road to Success. We define success on our own terms. Yours may be making a successful cookie empire like Famous Amos did. It may be in an invention to a car. Do you know that the Patterson Greenfield was manufactured by black people and was a superior car to Henry Ford? But Ford beat them out because he had the assembly line. Small difference could be what's keeping you off of the road to success. Successful people don't quit. Successful people find ways, means, and they don't quit. With that, I appreciate you attending Faith on the Road to Success. We have a number, and I hope that you use it sometime in the future. It is 646-668-8217. You can use that with any of the programs on Crown Talking Drums to communicate And you have to do that to get on my dashboard, because if I don't see you on the dashboard, I cannot open the mic and talk with you. I appreciate you listening. I hope that you share the information. I look forward to seeing you again next Thursday at 7. I also look forward to seeing you at 4 p.m. on Sunday, Eastern Time, 1 o'clock Pacific Time, where we talk about Did You Know? Very interesting programs there. That number can be used there. So let me get off so that the next host can come on, set up, and properly start his program. It's been my pleasure. It's been a blessing to talk to you all. This is John C. Abercrombie with Faith on the Road to Success. Be blessed, my friends. Be blessed.